The Hannity kicking gonna stop. It's gonna start now. It's gonna run through the summer, and it's hot, hot, hot in public, if you will.
That sucked. Let's try it again. What's up, everybody? It's Monday night. I am kicking it down here at the bar in the basement, about to have another fun-filled episode of Plum Love Foods Live. I am your host. My name is Chef Plum. I am a chef, a father who just had Father's Day. Thank you for the Father's Day wishes. I am also a weary traveler these days. That's right, a weary traveler. I guess that's the thing I can be, right? I'm going to be that. I am the weary traveler from a crazy, crazy weekend of catering out in the Hamptons. We had a lot of fun out there. So what's going on with you guys? I'll tell you what. I'm excited about this episode of this program. We were talking to the one and only Kristen Hartley. She is executive producer for Huffington Post and AOL Studios. And she's really cool. It'll be fun to talk to her about Huffington Post and how they make these videos that seem to be on Facebook all the freaking time that all we do is see them. I mean, you can't go anywhere on any social media and not see one of these videos. That means they're doing a great job with it. And she's done a lot of great stuff, and she'll be a fun person to talk to. It's also going to be fun to talk to her because she's an executive producer, so she's used to running the show. Well, guess what, Kristen? You're not running the show tonight. It's me. That's right. God help us all. Yeah, that's right. So listen, I want to kick this show off by asking a few questions. Maybe they're rhetorical. I don't know. And if anyone's curious out there, yes, I am popping the top on a cold one before we get into our questions. I've decided to have a couple of cheat days, and this Monday night is going to be one. The rest of the week won't be, but Monday night's going to be. I am enjoying a cold beer. Let me tell you what, it's really, really amazing. I am having Montauk Brewing Company's Driftwood Ale because I was out there and I got a chance to buy it. And this is one of my favorite breweries. I'm really excited. We're taking Edible Long Island East End on the road on July 9th, and we're going out to see these guys, and I can't wait because this beer is unbelievable. It screams summertime. They're just awesome, and they're good dudes, so it's going to be a lot of fun to go out there and hang out with those guys and drink some beers. Anyway, sorry for the – I digressed. I apologize. I think that's what it is. I'm learning how to say that word, digress, right? To say it right? I guess I said it right. I want to talk a little bit about catering. Listen, because, you know, that's what I know the most about. That's what I have the most experience with these days. And I want to talk about charging for catering. How do you guys charge when you cater parties and small dinners? How do you charge for that? You know, I try to do it per head. I really try not to because that can get confusing for people. You know, because I'm like, well, I have one less person, and now you got to do math, and it fucks up everything. But it doesn't change the fact that you still have to buy all the food for the amount of people you talked about. But people don't understand that. They don't fucking think about that. So I try to do it by job, and that's how I do it. I try to cost it out by job. I try to make myself a set amount of money, whatever I got to pay my servers, bartenders, et cetera. And then, of course, the cost of the food. But here's my issue. I think I need to start charging for the cost of food, like add a little bit onto that. I would if I were a restaurant. But here's why I'm asking these questions, and they're kind of rhetorical, because I keep quoting these parties out in the Hamptons, and people are blown away by how inexpensive I am. And I don't think it's the case, but apparently they do. So I'm trying to figure out if what am I doing? I'm happy with what I'm making, like it's working out fine, but I guess the ceiling, I'm nowhere near the ceiling. I could make more, I guess. I mean, but is it cool to make more? Is it cool to like, I believe in there's two ways to make more money. One, you can make more money by increasing your prices, or two, you increase your volume. So just like if you were trying to fix your food cost, you know, what do you want to do? Do you want to increase your prices, or do you want to increase your volume, increase your sales? You know, increasing your sales really, really can fix a lot of problems. So if you can make those sales higher. And to me, I kind of subscribe to that because, sure, I could charge for more. But when it comes down to it, you know, if I'm getting a party, you know, or two or three every week, the sheer volume makes up, you know, this is all from the financial standpoint, makes up for the difference in sales. Now, it makes for a longer week. But, you know, it's kind of the busy season. We kind of, in my business, we kind of all expect to be busy right now. So I don't know, like, am I doing this wrong? Am I messing this up? You know, I don't include gratuity, and then we usually get taken care of pretty well. But I split the gratuity between everyone who works the party. So everybody ends up doing pretty well. The party we just did this past weekend was quite an adventure. We were out in Southampton, and it was funny because we were there. No one knew we were coming but the principals who we spoke to. So we walked in the back fence, and then everyone's hanging out by this pool and having a great time. We walk in all wearing black. It was two servers, myself and another kitchen gentleman working with me. We're all dressed in black. I think they all thought they were about to get mugged. They're like, what the hell is going on here? Who are these people walking in? But we got there. The house was beautiful. It was a great setup. It was a perfect setup for a party. It was 30 people. It was really easy. Just a little bit of a drive or whatnot, but all that aside, it was a great party, very simple. But the whole house runs on propane gas, all right? The entire house runs on propane gas. So it has a propane tank, maybe it's underground, something like that. I know some people don't put these things underground, but this one was. So this propane tank is underground. We're getting this party going. We're firing things in the oven, and we put the pan on top of the burner. I light the burner. And it's just the fire is just piddling out. Like it's barely coming out. I'm like, what is the problem here? Now, listen, I could make lots and lots and lots of jokes with this, but I'm not going to because it's just way too easy. You know, a little bit of fire coming out when it's on high. Anyway, we couldn't quite figure it out. And the oven temperature started going down and getting lower and lower and lower. Come to find out, they told us too the pool wasn't heating. Come to find out, the propane tank for this rental house in Southampton that they were probably paying $2,000 a night for had run out of fucking propane for the entire house. Are you shitting me? No, I'm not shitting you. We were trying to fire fish. We were trying to fire all of our food. And we couldn't, the stove didn't work. So, chef, what did you do? Well, I wasn't real sure. So against everything I normally do, and I'm going to tell you why, I told the renter of the house, the main person, I pulled her aside and said, here's what's going on. But you don't do that unless you have a backup plan. Because if I pulled her aside and told her that, now they're going to get nervous, right? You pull them aside and you tell them that, and you tell them you have a plan to fix the issue, so everything's fine. Now you look like a superstar in front of them, which is kind of the idea. Look, we're running gimmicks, folks. That's all it is. It's gimmicks. I equate everything in this world to pro wrestling, and catering is no different. If you can make yourself look good, put yourself over to the people watching, you're going to look even better, and they're going to want you to come back over and over and over again. I always say the people don't need to know how we make things happen. They just need to know it's a great show. Let's not show them how we make the show. Let's just show them an amazing show. So after doing this, what I ended up doing was taking the grill outside at one of my guy I thought was out of propane, went and looked at it. Currently, it was not out of propane. We lit one burner on it. So we used indirect heating method and turned the grill into an oven. It worked out fantastic. We got to sear everything off and get it out there. Happy party. Incredibly happy people. They were apologizing to me as we left that the house was out of propane. But in the end, it was great. But here's my issue. Again, here's what I come down to. I don't know if I charge enough money. I'm happy with what I got paid. My guys are happy with what they got paid. I mean, so maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe it comes down to, so long as I'm happy, so long as the person doing the party is happy, who gives a shit? Maybe that's how I'll look at it from now on. I don't know. Listen, that's me ranting. I'll stop ranting for a second, and we'll get on with it. But that's just where it's at. We got a great show tonight, guys. I'm looking forward to it. We got Kristen Hartley coming on right now. She is the executive producer for Huffington Post and AOL Studios. It's going to be a great conversation with her. I want to know how in the hell all these Huffington Post food videos are all over Facebook. It's crazy. These things get like millions of views. It's absolutely insane. It's going to be a good time talking to her. She's done a lot of fun things with some cool chefs. It's going to be a great conversation with her. So anyway, you guys know the drill. Before we get into our guests, I'm going to take a quick breather here, get all my ducks in a row, and we'll be right back with the one and only Kristen Hartley. You're checking out the number one live digital audio program on a Monday night. Your Plum Love Foods Live. We'll be right back, guys. Hang tight. Oh, that's right, guys. My knife is smarter than yours. That's right, smarter. I'm talking Ergo Chef Knives. The unique patented shape makes it more of an extension of your hand. The curved handle of an Ergo Chef Knives allows for smoother cutting and less fatigue in your hand. Listen, I use these knives every day, and they are fantastic. They're my go-to knives. If I use a normal knife, like a regular chef knife anymore, my hands start to hurt and feel achy. Trust me, guys, I'm not making this up. These knives are the jam. Check them out at ErgoChef.com. That's ErgoChef.com. And tell them Chef Plum sent you by using the promo code PLUM15OFF. And get 15% off your purchase. Mike and Scott are great dudes over there, so check them out at ErgoChef.com. And you.
Oh, baby. Baby, I eat this shit from right out. I'm
dedicated to all the pretty girls. Pretty girls. Oh, pretty girls. Pretty girls. All the pretty girls in the world. In the world. In the ugly girls, too.
But to me, you're pretty anyway, baby. You give me your number, I call you up. You act like your pussy don't interrupt. I don't have no trouble with you fucking me, but I have a little problem with you not fucking me. Baby, you know I'ma take care of you, cause you say you got my baby and I know it ain't true. Is it a good thing? No, it's bad, bitch. For good or worse, makes you switch. So I walk on over with my crystal. Bitches, niggas put away your pistol. Dirty won't be having that in this house, cause bitch, I'll cripple your style. Now that you heard my charming voice, you couldn't get another nigga.
Your coochie won't get moist.
If you wanna look good and not be bummy, yo, you better give me that money.
That's right, everybody. Coming back live right here, Plum Love Foods Live. You know, I got to play a little Old Dirty Bastard, Got Your Money. One, it's an amazing song, but two, for me, it talks about, he mentioned video. I'm not going to try to link it to the video thing, but that song itself is about hustling. And when it comes to hustling, that is, to me, my guest at this time, again, an incredibly talented what she does with producing content for Huffington Post, for AOL Studios, and doing what she does is not an easy job, having to deal with people. So having the patience to deal with that and having the ability to deal with that is an amazing thing, and only very, very talented people can do that. And not only that, I want to point out, everybody, today that Plum's cavalcade of attractive people continues. Everybody say hello to my guest right now, Kristen Hartley, the executive producer for Huffington Post and AOL Studios. What's happening, homie?
Hey, how are you?
I am good. I'm having a beer. Now, last time I saw you, I wasn't drinking beer, but I tapped out and I'm having a couple.
That's okay. I'm having a hot toddy. So I've still got the voice thing going on, but, you know, it's a Monday night and it was a long day at work, so you just got to get it done.
No worries. And that's, I couldn't agree more. I am coming off of, I was shooting a TV show Thursday, prepping for 12 hours Friday,
In
the Hamptons on Saturday. I'm with you. That's what you do. But that's what it's about. It's about the hustle. And then doing the stuff that you do, in a weird way, it kind of is a little bit of a hustle itself, isn't it?
It's a lot of a hustle. You know, it's, you know, we're, those of us that work in food, we're, a lot of people in the industry are finding themselves in the middle of this space where, you know, whether you come from editorial or you come from, you know, broadcast, which is what I come from, you know, digital just seems to be sort of the soup du jour. And the transition is, it's really interesting. You know, the budgets are a little bit different, but you know, you wear a lot of hats, but you know, it's just like being in food, restaurant and beverage. You have to go in there, and it is a very take no prisoners, especially as a woman. And yeah, I'm going to do the woman thing, especially as a woman. And you just got to go in and you just want to make people happy and, you know, just make great shit and get it done. And
totally.
You just have to do the best that you can with what you have. You know, the budgets are a little bit smaller, but the creative freedom is definitely
right there.
And so it's, you know, no different than if you're a chef and you're working for, a restaurant group, or you're working for a pre-established, you know, chef who's been in the industry a long time. When you start your own thing, it's like you have a lot more of creative freedom, but a lot more of the responsibility is on you. So in addition to making the food that you want to make, you're also responsible for purchasing, and you're responsible for the menus, and you're responsible for marketing. And so, you know, being in culinary at this time is incredibly exciting with the digital age, but it's just it's not for the faint of heart. Like, you have to be willing to go in there and just wear a lot of hats.
100%. You couldn't be more right. And we're just kind of jumping right into it here. As you can see, basically it's like you and I sitting at the bar drinking, because I was going to get into your background and how you do what you do. But you brought up a couple of great points that I want to kind of just expand on a little bit. You know, I think that, I mean, this whole season of this program has kind of just become how much the culinary world is changing. And it just kind of happened organically on its own, how that's happened and how it's kind of become that. But you see things now like the things online, these OTT boxes, you know, Roku, Apple TV. It's really changing the game up a little bit. And especially when you have, if you're a chef and you can talk and be entertaining, it's a great time to be alive.
Yeah, it is. It really is. I mean, you know, for me, I believe that every genre has had its wave, if you will. Like, let's say we're surfing in California, and every genre has had that moment where the wave is coming and it crests, and we get to see that. And, you know, I grew up working in restaurants, and I started off in news, but in 2004, I got the privilege of working with Kat Cora for a good amount of time. And she's just an amazing chef and just a wonderful human being. And it was great. And I felt like I was at Food Network in 2004. That was the thick of the In the Kitchen time block. And everyone was looking at, that was when, you know, Irene Wong is doing Giada De Laurentiis, and that's when Karen Katz has had Emeril. And so all of the people, and Kathleen Finch was running Food Network, and everybody that made Food Network what it is today, that was that, you know, bracket of time where it was really cresting like a wave. And to be a part of that was just really, you know, an honor. And for me, with the way that digital is happening now, it's that same sort of wave is cresting again. And I just am incredibly grateful to see chefs and culinary and food get to have the respect and the admiration and just sort of like the fun and the play and the creativity that it's always deserved, you know, sort of a better late than never, right?
Well, you're right. But to get that creativity and to get that option, not even really option, just so many different ways to get it out there to do things, because this business has become so social media based now. I mean, honest to God, you can be a line cook and people want to know what your Instagram is, because they want to see what you're doing. And I mean, Instagram has become, it should be foodogram. That's what it's all about, with that stuff. So when you do what you do with Huffington Post, and you guys have such amazing videos now, do you just do food, or do you do other stuff with Huffington Post also?
No, I'm an executive producer, so I'm responsible for sort of our original production and our more sort of high-profile series. So Huffington Post, AOL, Verizon are all about, you know, just trying to tap into the existing zeitgeist and take it one step further. It's no different than what everyone else is trying to do right now. But, you know, one of the things I love about Huffington Post is that it, you know, we have an amazing Facebook, and, you know, although we, you know, every brand sort of has its history. I think that we definitely, we're a voice. And so for us, it's about just capitalizing on what we have. And right now, it's all about sort of the hashtag what's working, and it's about issuing positive change. And so they're very much in the space of trying to find new talent. And I think that's what's interesting about the digital age, having been in broadcast for a long time and having been in digital since like 2009, is that you don't have to be like a stand-in stirrer. You don't have to be, you know, food up until this, up until the last year and a half, just in my opinion, is if you're not somebody who is, you know, a pre-established chef, somebody who has like won some sort of competition show that was on Bravo or wherever else, or
right,
if you are a home cook that has like a blog, or somebody, you know, that has gained, you know, an audience, regardless of how talented you are, or how different or how interesting, you know, you're just sort of drowned out by the noise, because, you know, a lot of these networks, like their PR and their marketing, you know, you're not going to get past them. And so with the digital age and with YouTube and with Instagram and with all of these other great, you know, platforms, especially now with OTT, OTT is going to change everything.
It already is.
Now you're actually getting the chance to be someone where, like you said, you can be a line cook. You can be someone who is a recipe developer. Like, you know, like I've had the pleasure of working with Adina Sussman, who is one of Lee Schrager's people. She's an incredibly talented recipe developer and food stylist. She just is on the circuit right now for Lee's American Breakfast books, and also for Chrissy Teigen's, you know, new, you know, cookbook that she has out. Adina is ridiculously talented. She and I had the honor of working together a couple of years ago when she was just starting out. And, like, to see someone like her who's just so incredibly talented and just a beautiful person is really great. And that's what the digital age and all of this is about. It's about letting the talent and personality shine through. And it's not about whether or not a network discovers you or whether or not, you know, a digital platform discovers you. It's about just being able to have an audience and have a voice.
Well, that's exactly what it is. And people go on these shows, and listen, I've won my fair share of Food Network shows, but they go on these shows and they think, I won a Food Network. I won Cutthroat Kitchen. Okay, now they've discovered me. They're going to know who I am. But the reality is those are factories. To be completely honest with you, you're there. You're treated great while you're there, but after you're gone, nobody cares. And
they don't care about you, and they don't care about your brand or your message or your food. They just care about your story as it helps push their brand forward, as it helps push their, you know, audience forward.
I want to read you a tweet.
That's no different than anyone. That's no different than anyone else. It's like saying reality television is real. The jig is up. Everyone knows.
I want to read you a tweet we just got from The Industry, which is an amazing whole platform that's changing the way hiring and finding jobs for culinarians and hospitality people is done. They said, at Chef Plum, you and Kristen are hitting the nail on the head with social media driving this industry to the next level. And I think he's absolutely right. I mean, that's exactly what I think is happening. It's changing the way it's done, because now chefs, it's not just somebody, you know, listen, I'm older. I come from a different generation of cooks where we were, you know, cooks were seen, not heard. And that was it. And now it's completely the opposite. You need to be heard first and then seen. It's crazy how it's kind of changed.
Completely. And, you know, having been in the industry for a long time, I mean, listen, you know, it's the whole thing of that. Nobody wants to see someone who's boring. Nobody wants to see someone who's unattractive. And so seeing how the industry has changed in the last couple of years is – shut up.
That's why I'm on the radio.
Stop. I love the fact that you can see people of all different walks of life. I love being able to, you know, look online or even turn on the channel. Like, I don't know if you watch Esquire. I personally believe that Esquire has just got it down in terms of what to do with food programming for broadcast, in terms of like Knife Fight and that kind of thing. Like, it doesn't matter if you are a catering chef, if you're a chef, that credibility of having gone to culinary school, stage, will always be there, and it is well deserved.
Sure,
it is
absolutely
well deserved. But there are some people that either didn't have the money or didn't have the upbringing that grew up and their parents owned a restaurant or, you know, whatever their training is, that they just have it, you know. And in the end, I think the one thing that I love about culinary and comedy, in my opinion, are very similar in the sense that you can be a legacy, you can come from whatever it is that you come from, but if you're going to come to the table and you've got what it takes, you're accepted. And I love that, because at the end of the day, it's about the material. It's about what
totally.
We're trying to do, what we're trying to create, what it is that we're trying to, and it's about love. It's not about being a food snob, or it's not about being anything else. It's just, we're all here, you know, because this is what we love. This is what we eat. This is what we sleep. This is what we breathe. And that kind of community, in any way that you can find it, it just is just so deserving, and it's just ready. And this is its time. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
Well, food is a very, very powerful thing. And what you said there was actually very, very inspirational. We have a lot of young cooks, and if they didn't pay much attention to that, I want you to stop, hit that 15-second rewind button, and listen to what she just said there, because that was some pretty inspirational shit. I'm going to put it on a T-shirt right now. I'm writing it down. Food is love. That's awesome. No, so I think it's interesting when you look at how powerful food can be. We come from very different worlds, and how did you and I meet? We met by smearing chicken wings all over our face and making jokes to each other the other weekend. That's how we met. And
yep.
You know, that it's amazing how that can happen, you know?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, and being someone who didn't go to culinary school, that has just sort of, you know, grown up working in, you know, some kitchens were amazing. Some kitchens are like Olive Garden and Chili. Yeah, I'm calling the brands. You know, you grow up doing this kind of thing. And I was raised by a second generation Italian grandmother who, you know, we didn't have toys growing up. It was all about, you know, you're going to stand here and help me tie bracciole, and I'm going to teach you how to make sauce. You know, that was the way she kept me engaged. And so, you know, once I got the honor of working, you know, with Chef Cora, you know, years ago, and having somebody who was like, okay, you didn't go to culinary school, but you get it, and you're paying attention, and you care, so I'm going to teach you what it is that I need for you to do to cook my food, and to
right.
shop for me, and to do my mise en place. And so because that passion for me was there, and because at least that base there, and basic knife skills, like, to just be taken in, I will, you know, I've had executive producers that shall remain nameless, who have said to me, like, oh, you're never going to be able to work with chefs. You're not going to be able to unless you, you know, turn around and go to culinary school. And I was devastated at the time. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm not going to be able to do this. And that's completely untrue. Do I wish I had the money to go to culinary school and be one of those culinary producers? Absolutely. But it doesn't
right.
mean that I don't get to do what I love. And more importantly, especially in a digital age, the ability and the power to give a voice to people that are talented and have something to say and just are really excited about who they are and the food that they make and, you know, what it is that they want to put out there, the ability to develop around them and to put them out there, that's a gift, not for them, but for me. That,
sure.
I mean, it's like the best job there is. It's like I get to eat food, I get to travel, I get to meet people, and I get to go, yes, you're awesome. And although some big fancy, like, network or somebody didn't give you a chance, there is an audience for you, and there are people that relate to you, and I can help you achieve that, and I can help you get that. And so that's a power and a happiness for me, and it's well deserved for them. I mean, I feel like, you know, this whole world is just about what we're able to, you know, be able to give to other people, and the culinary community is just ripe and perfect for being able to be out there with what it is that they're passionate about.
Well, and the public has to eat. People like food. People like to eat. You
oh,
know,
yeah.
chefs have become the next rock stars. I mean, that's basically what it is, and I mean that in
There's
a good way and a bad
things.
Way.
There's three things in the world that are universal across culture, across gender, across religion, across everything. It is sex, it is food, it is music. Those are the three things.
That's probably the right order,
whatever
too.
Whatever it is, those are the three. Right.
In that order.
Right.
I guess two
order.
And three might be interchangeable, but number one is no question. That's
number one is, like, you know, that's why it goes first.
unless you've been married as long as I have, then you're kind of like, that sandwich looks good.
or I've been married for 10 years. I'm like, sleep would be nice.
Oh, Jesus. Don't tell your husband that. It's terrible. How do you guys find new talent? So there's so much talent out there. How do you run across it? Because I got to be honest with you. Like, I'm heavy into the casting world. I know lots of casting people. We know some casting people together. I've never once seen, hey, Huffington Post is looking for this. How do you guys find people?
We're very lucky that because we're a very popular brand, we have people come to us all the time, which is no different than any network or Condé Nast or Hearst or, you know, Eater or, you know, any of them. You know, everyone right now is, regardless of, like I said, if you're into music, if you're into comedy, if you're into food, whatever it is that you're into, people out there that feel that they have something that they want to put out there are, you know, really trying to get in touch with all of the different places. And there's more platforms than ever before to showcase yourself, which is what matters. Like, what doesn't matter is, like, who's the coolest or who has the most ratings. None of that matters anymore, and that's what the beauty of social is. I mean, for God's sake, if YouTube hasn't taught us anything, it's that you can be an absolute idiot and have 2 million, 3 million followers.
It's insane.
You know, there's something out there for everyone, but, you know, I think TV and broadcast is kind of afraid of that. I think a lot of people are terrified that there are people that, you know, aren't, you know, perfectly attractive, or they're not perfectly well-spoken, or maybe they have a thick accent, or maybe they don't have the most perfect background. And so they can't, you know, control it. And so in my opinion, broadcast is scrambling to try to figure out why all of these different personalities are, you know, have the followings that they have, versus in digital, they come to us, say, hey, you know, this thing I was thinking about, and it's kind of crazy and it's kind of wacky, but hey, let's give it a shot. So in addition to them coming to us, you know, it's all about whoever the person is, and, you know, you got to be vigilant. Like, I go to a lot of festivals, and, you know, I go to a lot of restaurants, and I have a lot of friends in the community. And like with anything, you just got to keep an open mind, man, you know?
And this is what's great about what you do, and I just want to point this out to you, a tweet from our buddy Cody Barbo, who is from industry. He's checking the show out tonight. He's you kind of have an unlimited pool of talent to choose from. He says 1,000+ new jobs are being added to the industry every day across the country, more restaurants opening than ever. There's never been a higher need for talent. And with that alone, for all these different outlets now, it's almost like it's like fishing in a fishbowl. Like, it's just so much out there. But there's going to be some duds every now and then. I'm sure you've worked with a couple. What's the story about maybe someone who you thought would be amazing? These guys, don't give me any names, of course, but this guy is awesome, or this girl is incredible. Then she gets in front of the camera and it's deer in headlights.
Yeah, I mean, I have worked with one talent in particular that was got to the end of a very, very, very popular culinary show on cable, and it was, you know, just a very talented person, and we got there, and I was so excited, because it's nice to be able to, I love, you know, the at-home cook, but I also really love the chef,
right?
Because there's just this energy there, you know. Like, I love at-home cooks, but, you know, when you've been working in restaurants, your kitchens your whole life, you're like, let's do this shit, you know. There's just, you know, I love that. And so my team and I were just so completely excited. And the more we started to work with this person, you know, we're on set, and this person is, you know, well, what do I say here? And, if I'm doing a lamb burger, you know, like, why am I doing a lamb burger? And, like, again, I've only been in food for, you know, less than 20 years. And, again, I didn't go to culinary school. I mean, I know my stuff in a lot of ways, but I shouldn't have to tell someone who went to culinary school and who also made it all the way to the end of one of the most popular chef programs ever. I shouldn't
Right.
have to tell you why you're making what you're making. And so,
I mean, you couldn't be more right. I mean, listen, if you have to tell somebody.
And it's just what it is. And so, and I also think that there's a lot of, you know, it's also hard because, you know, there's also, and you know this, is that there's a divide, you know, in the community of, you have the chef, and you have the at-home cook. And it's kind of like the Hatfields and the McCoys. And I think the only time you start to kind of run into that is when you have the at-home cooks that try to come off as chefs. And it's insulting to the people that not only spent the money, but more importantly spent the time and the training and did stage and all of the
internships
and everything that they did. And it's like, oh, well, you're some person that, you know, has like some blog that, you know, everybody likes when, you know, I'm $150,000 in debt. I lived in France for a year. I lived in Italy for a year. I've studied with these people. I shouldn't have to argue with you over what something is. Because that's your, like, your grandma's recipe. And
my brain is boiling right now.
I get that. Yeah, I get that. I get that. And that is a very real, that is like a very real thing in our community. And the more that YouTube, and I will completely, I'll cop to it, that digital as a whole is not helping that, you know, sort of situation.
Absolutely.
And it also doesn't help when the networks that shall remain nameless want to do their whole, let's get grilling people, let's get, you know, cafeteria chefs, let's do this, let's do that. And then you know, in the same company with people that have a Michelin, you know, that have a Michelin stars, like you can't do that, you know.
It's not the same thing. And listen,
I have to
rant for a second because you couldn't be more right. And it's something that I've said for years and it drives me crazy. Two quick stories and see if you agree with them. I was on a show called The Taste, season one, fantastic show. They wanted a guy who would run his mouth. I was a guy who ran his mouth. Unfortunately, I almost set the studio on fire. Long story in itself. I'll tell you another time. I was gonna make a wood burning grill inside a set as my first show. I didn't know I couldn't do that.
It was awesome. Stuff. Sorry.
They don't tell you until after you've already got the grill burning. They wanted to call us. You know, I've been a chef for 20 years. I went to culinary school. I've worked in a five diamond, five star, AAA mobile rated hotel. I've worked in a Michelin star hotel. And they wanted to call me a foodista. And I said,
Yeah, we love our labels. My industry loves its labels.
And then the next thing that drives me crazy, and listen, I don't mean this in a bad way at all. There are certain programs that do shows where they have kids come on. And a kid could win said program, and now the kid is going to brand himself as Chef, let's just make a name up, Chef Biff McGillicuddy, right?
Yep.
And to me, it's almost bastardizing the term chef. The word chef has become a bastardized term. And to me, when I've actually done events with someone who has done that, and I won't talk to them. It makes me fucking crazy. I want to be like, dude, have you slaved away for fucking 14 hours a day? Have you opened a resort for 1,200 people in 4 days with three people? You haven't done shit.
Yeah.
Stop calling yourself chef. It's,
and you would be correct.
I mean, look, here's my thing, Kristen.
I tell people all the time that the word chef is as overused as the word luxury in real estate.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, real estate, everything's luxury, air quotes.
Right.
Chef is now air quotes.
You couldn't be more right. Listen, I've seen every single episode of ER, and I watched Grey's Anatomy up to season 5. I'm pretty sure you could call me doctor. What do you think? Want to call me doctor? I think I should be a doctor. That's what I think. I don't know.
At the very least, you could be a physician's assistant.
Yeah, I mean, they do call it practice. Sorry, how many more bad jokes can I make?
Yeah, the practice. Yeah.
Actually, I've watched all those shows, Boston Legal and The Practice. I could be a lawyer. How about that? No,
right. If you've watched there should be some sort of like University of Phoenix program that if you've watched a certain amount of episodes, especially on the legal shows, that you should have some sort of like adjunct associate's degree.
Absolutely. And I'm going to step down off my soapbox after this last statement. Any of these quote unquote kid chefs or home chefs or whatever you are, do a competition show with me, I will fucking wipe the floor with you. You don't even know what the deal is. I will annihilate you and I will tell you, for fact, the Easter Bunny is not real. And I'll do it on fucking camera in front of everybody. You can kill yourself. That's enough. I'm done. Sorry. All right. Anyway. It bothers me.
I agree with you. And you know what? Honestly, I had this person who was an executive producer for many, many, many years to one of the biggest chefs in the business. And she had said to me, unless you go back to culinary school, you can never work for me. And I was devastated. And I moved on, and I had worked for a bunch of other things. But, you know, when I had the opportunity to work with Chef Mark Forgione, Forge, as they were called him. And about my second culinary production meeting with him, I realized that a good 40% of what he was talking about doing was just in some ways outside the scope from a development standpoint of where I had trained and what I had known. And so I called a friend of mine. Her name is Carissa Melnick. She is an incredible culinary producer and an executive producer and a showrunner. She's done everything from Martha Stewart to Food Network. She's incredibly talented. And she is someone who actually used to work at the commercial agencies and was like, you know, I really like this food thing. And she spent the money and went to culinary school and took those 5 steps back. Exactly. And so I brought her on to help me, you know, develop, you know, what Forge wanted to, the recipes that he wanted to produce for this series. And, you know, it was a very humbling experience. Like, not that I had ever thought that I was amazing, but by that time I had been, you know, in the kitchen with, you know, Chef Repair and Michelle Richard, and, you know, not with just, you know, like the Alton Browns and the Paula Deans and those people. And so I was like, okay, I can kind of run. And once she came in and I saw the conversations that she was having, it's like learning Spanish in school and having a conversation, even though that you're mostly fluent, and then having, and then watching someone who's actually from a particular region have a conversation. She was just fluent in a way that I wasn't. And this was years ago. And I was like, you know, this is why the culinary community is so frustrated. And they have every right to be, is that there is just a level here that you just, you can't, you know, it's MC Hammer. You can't touch this.
That's all right. Dude, but I got me some baggy pants. I could probably make it happen.
I got my Cavaricci's.
You know the ones that had to crotch down to like the knee, and they had like weird designs. That's what I'm
talking the thing,
about.
Man. That's the thing. I, you know, when I was in high school, all I wanted to do was look like TLC. That's all I wanted.
Nice. Wait, which one? Which one? Left eye or
who? Oh, Chili. No, Chili. I wonder if like Chili with the washboard abs. Absolutely.
No doubt. No doubt. I'm with you. I'm with you. And I'm talking
That's when I really learned. I was like, you know what, the community is frustrated, and I understand why. And I want to be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
So you just got done doing a really cool project. I think it's really cool. With Instagram and Pinterest, where you're doing a whole series focused on the most popular recipes based on Instagram and Pinterest. How did that come about, and what's the end product like? Have you seen it yet?
I just finished directing 20 episodes. We have 20 more to go. We're taking a little bit of a break. And, you know, it's no different than what everyone's trying to do. You know, BuzzFeed, you know, their tasty videos, Taste Made, Food 52. Anyone who's seen Avec Eric is really interesting on Food 52 with Chef Repair. You know, like you said, social is really changing everything. And so now even digital and broadcast is trying to play catch up to social. Somebody's already always ahead of the game, and then everybody else is trying to catch up. So this is just a series where we have, you know, run the metrics and done the algorithms of what are some of the most popular recipes that people have looked at on Pinterest and Instagram. And it's just kind of teaching an average everyday person on how to make it without feeling like terrified.
So wait, what do you base that off of? So you're talking about algorithms and whatnot. So when you look at a picture on Pinterest or Instagram, that you're like, you know, I'm going to contact this person and see if they want to be a part of it, or your team obviously is doing that. But what brings that up? What makes you want to look at it? Is it the like count? Is it maybe the hashtags? What makes you like pay attention to that?
It is. You know, it's a combination of, so the way that digital works now, it's very algorithm-based. It's very Silicon Valley, which is, you know, you have these programs that you basically run that are data and metrics, and they tell you you know, the hashtag cheesy is the most used hashtag, or, you know, in the month, you know, in the fall, potatoes are, you know, one of the most, you know, popular hashtags. And so it's all of these different algorithms that you basically run, and they cross-reference based on anything, whether it's the time of year, whether it's the subject, whatever it is, it can basically spit out and tell you what are people looking at, when are they looking at it, and, you know, what are they the most interested in. So this was based on, you know, some of the metrics of what people really love, but also what looks like just really pretty and appealing. Because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's overplayed. There's a lot of stuff that's just kind of been on everything, and it doesn't do anyone any good, you know, to put something out there that's already been all over everything. So, you know, like the hatchback potatoes have been everywhere in the last, like, 6 months. You know, where you do the crosshatch and you stuff the butter and the cheese and the bacon and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They love that whole thing. So that's, like, a really big thing. The other big thing right now is anything that's, like, the funfetti. So you take a cake mix and you just basically dump a bunch of sprinkles into it. Yeah,
don't
that's, like, huge. It, you know, it kind of tells you what these things are. But you also go, okay, so if everyone's looking at, let's take the funfetti thing, and everyone's loving the funfetti thing, whether it's funfetti cupcakes or it's funfetti cake or whatever it is, you know, like,
I don't think I can force my
mouth
to say funfetti. I don't think I can force my mouth to say that.
It's a mouthful, man. It's also not an easy recipe. Spoiler alert. So, like, if you're going to teach somebody how to hack something like that, like, I can, like, I'll, spoiler alert also. So to hack something like the funfetti thing, let's say you kind of want to make, like, something that's like a funfetti, but you don't want to do a cake or a cupcake because that's everywhere. So what you can do is you can take something like pizza dough. You can take pizza dough and you buy any refrigerated pizza dough and you can cut it into strips, right? And you can basically put the sprinkles in the pizza dough and you roll it up and you would boil it like you would boil a bagel.
Okay,
like
I'm following you.
And you boil it, right, and you boil it in water, and now the sprinkles are actually in the dough. You pull it out of the hot water, and you can throw it in the oven. And now you bake it off like you would a bagel, and you pull it out, and now you basically have, like, a funfetti sort of, like, freckle bagel type thing. And whether you want to split it open and stuff it full of your own homemade cream cheese, or if you want to brush it with butter and roll it in cinnamon sugar, you know, whatever crazy concoction you want to make, you know, that's what you can do. So it's basically
hold on 1 second. Slow down here. don't a lot of those, like, sprinkles, don't they start to lose their color as they heat up and as they are in the water and whatnot? Don't they kind of just start to bleed and become
mess? It definitely does turn the water a color. But you would be surprised that if you only do it for a certain amount of time, almost like shocking, then you at least are able to bring that sort of, like, dough up, and then you finish it off in the oven.
Interesting. And now, and why are we doing this?
And it's a very weird colored water. But, you know, like for example, we did a thing. So everybody loves the hatchback potatoes. We did a thing called volcano potatoes.
Okay.
You take the potato. Okay.
Have I seen this?
You boil it whole. You boil it whole, and then you cut the top and the bottom off just to kind of make a little base. And then you can either take, if you've got good knife skills, you can take a paring knife or you can take a melon baller, and you hollow out as best you can without breaking down the potato. And you sort of make, like, a little hole in it. And you can stuff it if you want to stuff it with ham, if you want to stuff it with bacon, you could stuff it with prosciutto, you could stuff it with whatever it is that you want. And you can stuff it with, you know, cheese, like, whatever it is. And then what we did then was then we wrapped it in bacon. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We wrapped it in bacon, secured it with a toothpick, set it on parchment paper on a baking sheet, standing up, and you bake it off for, like, a good 15 to 20 minutes, pull it back out, stuff some cheese onto the top of it. You want, like, good shredded cheese. Like, this is where you want, like, a good quality, like, melting cheese. Just as the top, and then you baste the sides with, like, a barbecue sauce, finish it off in the oven. I know. But this is what people love. And then and you pull it out. And when you cut into this thing, it's literally this sort of thing that's just oozing over the top with, like, bacon and cheese or, like, you know, whatever it is that you've stuffed it with. And it's just sort of, like, molting out of the top like a volcano. So that's,
all right, hold on a second.
On the hashback potatoes.
All right, clearly here I have two comments for you, and I have to say them to you. Number one, I had no idea HuffPost makes pot food, munchy food, which is amazing. I think you guys need to stop smoking weed when you're working. Number two, Kristen, I had this giant picture of you. I think it's completely changed. I think you need to get a real job now. I'm just saying, like, you're baking potatoes
right.
with bacon. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm joking, of course. That sounds amazing.
No,
but
it's
here's
true.
The thing.
No, it's totally true. Like, my culinary stylist just got back from, like, 3 months in Italy and working on this amazing cook, and she and I are just sitting there, like, with our thumbs, like, shoving, like, ham and cheese.
That's
and everything.
Amazing.
And we're looking at each other going, how did this become our lives?
Yeah, but here's what the thing is. You're doing that. You're doing stuff just like that.
Have you ever seen Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which is a great show on Netflix?
Right.
One of Tina Fey and Robert Carlock. There's a line in it that Titus says, and he goes, I can't fix America. And that's pretty much where food is headed right now.
But here's the thing.
You can't fix America. So if they want ham and cheese stuffed into a potato, then that's what you're doing.
But that's exactly what I'm getting at. So you'll do that, and you'll make the video, and you'll put it out there. It'll go on Facebook, and it'll get 1.2 million views because that's awesome. That's amazing. How do you guys, obviously the content itself, but like in the great following you have, but like you put a video out there, and you get amazing, amazing reaction to it. Everybody I know is now, you know, retweeting or reposting on Facebook. I'm still learning Facebook. I'm new to it. That's another story. But you'll see these HuffPost videos come up nonstop, especially if you're a food person. How did that happen? How did they get so much traction?
It's crazy, isn't it?
You understand that a lot of your stuff, a lot of your stuff that you guys will do on this, I'm not shitting on anybody, but a lot of the videos that you guys will do, you will get more viewers than 75% of shows on Food Network, 90% of shows on Cooking Channel. And anything you get more views than they do.
Yes, you are correct.
On a fraction
of the
budget. You are
absolutely correct. You know, a very small fraction of the budget, that's for sure. You know, in defense of some of the production companies, the networks in general, and I have no problem saying this, but the networks in general are just really giving the production companies a run for their money in the sense that what the networks are expecting these days for the amount of money that they're giving the production companies,
it's
really atrocious. And I get it; it's a trickle down effect, and you know a lot of it has to do with that advertising as we knew it has changed a lot. But you know that's also where digital can help. Is that if you look at there are some beautiful things, and I'll send them to you when we get off this call. That there are some beautiful pieces that I've seen, like Driscoll strawberries.
Organic
Strawberries has these beautiful videos on YouTube that was shot by Jamie Tiampo from Seafood Media, who is president of the International Association of Culinary Professionals, and they just did these beautiful, high quality videos for like no money. And that's a great example of like how you can do branded content, but it's still interesting to the people that are in the community. But right now, the networks are not interested in that. The networks just want the lowest common denominator. The networks are officially at the point where they are the Applebee's of programming. Of like, we just want the lowest common denominator. We don't want to lose any more advertising dollars. Every network that says they want to do something different is full of it. They don't. They want to do the same thing. And they have the same algorithms that everybody else has, where they just want to program to their pre-existing audience. And no one's willing to take a chance. And that's one of the things that I really applaud Esquire Network for doing, is that they've done an incredible job of really trying to, like, make something different and put something, you know, different out there. And, you know, versus everybody else, you know, it's a shame when you see people who help create the genre and make it what it is be the same people that are responsible for throwing it in the trash.
Man, I mean, actually, I'm gonna slide my soapbox over to you. That was, I mean, that was some very poignant shit right there, for real. I mean, it's amazing how, I don't know, the networks being Applebee's is quite the way to put it. Because, so let me ask you this, all right? I'm gonna ask you, this is more of a personal, self-serving question, but I'm gonna ask it to you because I think it's interesting. I had a conversation on the way home from my client tonight regarding this very question I'm about to ask you. I've been approached by a large media company. I'm not going to say any names. I'll text it to you if you want to see it. But about taking content that I've already made and future content, and they want to make it branded content for their lifestyle shows on their channels.
Yep.
Obviously, they don't want to pay for it, but they want to help make it, get it funded, et cetera, all that sort of stuff.
Right.
Now, is that a smart move? Or is it, you know what, maybe you should look at going digital, talking to, you know, Foodable, Tastemade, Huffington Post, things like that as a different outlet for it. Because the content, we don't need an outlet for it. We're doing fine with it. But to do something else, it's to have another distribution point instead of looking at doing something like, you know, this company who has a bunch of local TV shows and, you know, a ton of different states and whatnot. But the problem with it is that in my brain, I think that's dying. What's your opinion on something like that?
Well, I mean, I've seen both sides of it. You know, I would offer that it depends on what your end goal is. That we have quite a few people that are incredibly talented that produce their own stuff either out of their own pocket or because they got their own sponsor. And they make something and they're not looking anything more than just a boost. And that is where, you know, if, you know, any publication, so not AOL, not just AOL or the Huffington Post, but any publication, whether it's any of the Condé Nast, any of the Hearst, anybody, you know, you're basically pitching it the way that you would pitch it to like a newsroom of like, hey, there's this thing. Do you want to pick up this story?
Right.
And so if it works for them, if it's either on brand or it's something new or different, then they'll go ahead and air it and that thereby boosts whatever it is that chef or that person already created. But then there's the opposite, where you have people that made something on their own, where they're incredibly proud of it, and they don't need the distribution, nor are they looking for it. And in the research, a digital or, more importantly, an agency entity will stumble across it, you know, because we're always looking at what people are doing that's out there that looks beautiful and that's interesting and different. And so you have to be voracious. And so if they stumble across something that say you've made or somebody else has made and they're like, oh, this is really great, so we won't have to pay for this thing because it's already made. So we'll just go to this person and say, hey, we're going to distribute this for you, even though you've already made it and you've already spent the money out of pocket. And we're not going to pay you for it. But if we can get a sponsor on board to do another batch or a second season, then we'll pay you. They're not necessarily trying to be assholes, but there definitely is that whole, you've already made something that's super cool, or you're that person that already has a following, so we can turn around to an advertiser and say, hey, we've got Chef Plum over here who has, you know, 500,000 Instagram followers, and he made this awesome series, and we've got it for you. So if you guys want to do this again, then we can go ahead and do that, but you're going to give us the money, not him, and we're going to get him, and he's going to make this thing again, but this time he's going to distribute it across his channels that he did originally, but we're going to boost it across all of our platforms as well. And maybe for a little extra money, we'll go ahead and put it on, you know, some of our OTT platforms, and so you guys get a little bit of extra. They are trying to do two things. Number one, they're trying to service their own ends, of course. And number two, they are in their very own special short bus sort of way trying to help you. But I will be perfectly honest, the helping you part is very low on the totem pole. It's like really 20% helping you, 80% helping themselves, and, you know, getting the business of the client. But, you know, to your point, any listener, any chef, anyone in the business right now, anybody who wants to be in the business right now, it is very hard to make something and try to distribute it yourself. It's very hard. It is very hard to grow an audience. Last year, I created a show that I won a couple of awards for. I worked with some very talented people from Comedy Central and HBO, and our brand had nothing to start with. And we had the engine of Huffington Post and AOL. And still, it took us a year to grow an audience. And so it depends on what your end game is. If you're someone who wants to go from having 20 followers to having, 50,000 followers in 3 months, then take, if that big media company comes to you. But if you're doing okay on your own and you don't really need them, then just keep doing what you're doing. Because anybody who has watched YouTube, whether it's Michelle Phan or Rosanna Panzino from Nerdy Nummies or Lily Singh or any of these people, now with the digital age and especially with social, if you build it, they will come. And so if you are passionate, you know what it is that you want to do, then you really do just keep at it. Those of you who are passionate and talented, you are coming into your era where you don't need the big machines like you used to. So if you have the patience and the fortitude to keep going, then just keep going, because eventually we're going to be the ones knocking on your door, not the other way around.
Wow, that's an amazing piece of advice. Again, that's a learning tree moment for anyone checking the show out tonight. And honestly, you should stop and rewind and check us out. We've had such a great conversation here, and I haven't even plugged your social media yet because I'm an asshole.
Nobody wants to see pictures of my son and a post-day BLT. Nobody wants to see that.
Oh my God, you're hysterical. You can make sure you could follow Kristen, of course, on Instagram at Hartley TV. That's at Hartley TV on Instagram. Do you have a Twitter? I don't think I follow you on Twitter. Do you have a Twitter? You probably don't.
I do not have a Twitter.
You are missing the maelstrom of stuff. There's so much stuff going on. So honestly, the Twitter's blowing up.
No, I'm like Dennis Leary. Like with my mouth, I would just get myself in trouble.
Yeah, but he stole people's shit, man. Come on. I'm a giant stand-up comic fan, man. Oh, I don't know.
Are you? That's a whole different show then. You like comedians. I'm your gal.
I did stand-up. I used to do – I did – like open. Let me rephrase that. I did open mic a number of times and worked my shit to having about a good 15 minutes or so, which was awesome. And basically it's all self-deprecating humor, of course, because we're East Coast.
Oh, look out
now.
Other than food, that's my other thing is I work with a lot of really, really great comedians. And I always say that comedy and food are very, very similar in the sense – and chefs and comedians are equally as fucked up because – You're working crazy, horrible hours.
Right.
Crazy, horrible hours. Everything is overly sexual. And there is no other business where every single night you are putting yourself out there for a bunch of people who have no idea how to do what you do, get to judge you live in real time.
Holy shit, that's genius.
There's no other business. It's food and it's comedy. That's it. They're exactly the same. There's no other business where that gets to happen.
That is genius. I mean, I make a reference to pro wrestling and food.
Comedy and food.
Wow, that is fucking
everybody
genius.
Who thinks that they can do what you do and can't gets to judge you live in real time all day, all night.
I love that. I don't think I can top that. I think that's where it stops. Like, because that was amazing. Like, honestly, I've never heard a better reference. So here's what I want to do. And you've been so much fun to talk to. I could talk to you for 4 hours. You know that? Like, we could just keep going nonstop. I want to tell you my stories of Food Network. I want to tell you about Food Network stuff.
Oh, that is definitely not. I can tell you my stories too. That is definitely not for our listeners. I feel like. Food Network is like they're like the gay mafia. They're out there. Like you can't say stuff. That's it. No. When somebody
they
you'll hear a
me.
Knock on the door and you and I will never see the light of day again.
Ugh, it's unbelievable. Look, 2 seconds. They called me for Food Network Star this season coming up. They called me. Called me. Hey, we want to see you. Come in here and hang out. I'm not going to name the casting agency, but you know who the fuck they are. They called me. And at a request, I guess, from some, I don't know how it fucking works. I'm like, okay, cool, I'll come in. Because this will be, I had a contract for season 10, long story. Anyway, they called me. I get there and they tell me
you're
I have too much
experience. For them. I'm surprised that they didn't harangue you into that.
All the stories I could tell you. They said I have too much exposure and I'm beyond what they're doing right now. Like, it wouldn't, they said it wouldn't, in the words of the casting person, it wouldn't be fair.
Right. No, it wouldn't.
Not a thing. Not even a thing. What are you talking about?
Because I mean, look at it. You're talking about home cooks. You're talking about people that are like, I'm from X and X part of the country, and I have my own local catering business.
Right.
Like, not saying there's anything wrong with that, but it's like you said before, you can't put so. And what's crazy is you have people like Giada, you have people like Bobby, you have all of these chefs on there that, you know, have restaurants and that have been in this business for so many years, and those are the ones that are the judges. It's just it's hilarious. It's a great, again, comedy. It's great comedy.
It's crazy. Anyway, all that aside, that's for another time when we're talking. I want to give you my quick speed round and get you out of here. Again, I've kept you already later than I told you, and you've been
so much
fun to talk to. It's been really educational to hear about how these videos get so much heat and how you guys find talent and just everything that you've done. It's really been very, very cool. I've been taking notes, actually, because I'm going
to
follow your career path. I'm quitting my job tomorrow. It's been amazing. So just a quick speed round. So at what point was there a dish that you had, you know, maybe it was a dinner or a lunch or breakfast that you had when you ate it and you went, oh, my God, this is amazing. This is a life-changing dish. All of a sudden now food is not something I have to do to sustain myself. Food is an amazing thing I want to continue to eat because it gives me this feeling, this emotion. It's affecting me. Was there a dish that's happened with you with?
Absolutely.
I think I said I said with 4 times in one sentence right there. That's a professional broadcaster.
It's the whiskey. absolutely. I had the absolute honor of spending an entire day and evening with Michelle Richard of Centronelle in D.C. And at the end of, we were working on a pilot for Food Network at the time. And I spent the whole day and the whole evening in his kitchen following him and his staff around and just documenting everything. And that night he said, I have to cook for you. And he sat me down and he made me like the 6-course meal. And it was just the two of us. And it was just absolutely life-changing. I will get shot for this because saying this to chefs, but I am not a potato person. I don't
like potatoes. Time out. Stop.
I know.
You just did a whole gimmick for 20 minutes on how you bake the potato with cheese and ham in it.
Yeah. No, it's just not my thing. It's not my thing. I'm Northern Italian and we're into vegetables. Anyway, so he has an entire book, an amazing book, about all the different ways to make potatoes. It's incredible. If you haven't gotten it, it's called Happy in the Kitchen. The foreword is by Thomas Keller. For all of you out there, it is a must-have. It is absolutely incredible. Beautiful coffee table book, incredible recipes.
Awesome.
Michelle believes that every beautiful meal that could ever be made comes from potato. And he made me a bunch of potato dishes. And I was like, oh, my God, this is incredible. And it's not that I don't like potato. It's that I've never had potato transcended. I've never had it reimagined for me. And it was just to watch a chef of that caliber just sort of like do their thing. It changed my life. It changed my career. It changed everything.
Wow. Wow. That's crazy. And it's just all about a potato, huh? How about that?
Yeah.
How about that?
Absolutely. Well, and he also made what he calls an escargot pizza. And it's a very thin cracker flatbread with like a pesto. And the escargot with the garlic butter. And it sounds absolutely disgusting. I guarantee you, if you were going to the electric chair, you would want that as your last meal. It's everything right in the world. It is everything right in the world.
I'm not a big escargot fan, but now I want to try that for sure.
It's beautiful.
I call the pe- it's what?
Earthy and beautiful.
I thought you said curvy and beautiful. I'm like, did
no.
you like that? Makes me think of worms. That's kind of weird.
They are curvy.
But
they are.
They are. That's why I was like, I guess it works.
Yeah.
But
no,
I refer to people in this business that I'm in as a chef and what we do. And even what you do, to be honest with you, is, you know, we're kind of a broken band of pirates. We're like the Lost Boys from Peter Pan. We're just a
Breakfast
group of people who ended up where we're at, not really planning on it, but just kind of happened. And it's what we do, and we love to do it. And in that, we have great food and we have great cocktails. Same thing, same question with food, but from a cocktail standpoint, have you had a cocktail? Maybe it was a beer, maybe it was something, you know, maybe it was just a shot of something that you had that maybe the first time you had mezcal, I don't know, that made you realize, wow, this is a whole different level of having a cocktail or having a drink.
Classic dirty martini. Classic dirty martini.
Nice.
I went to college at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas, which is not known for their cocktails. You were talking about some good old boys with penny pitchers and nickel long necks or whatever the hell they call it. And
I was
absolutely drunk on disgusting cheap beer. So I did not drink in college. And in 1999, I moved to New York City, and I immediately started working for Lifetime Television. And my producer at the time said, I'm going to take you out for a drink. And she took me to the Hudson Hotel. And in 1999, that's when, like, Justin Timberlake and Britney were dating and, like, the Knicks didn't suck. And, you know, it was a whole different era. And so she took me to the bar and she got me
I just broke up with Britney right about 1999. So that's why Justin had a chance.
Right,
that's
what happened.
About.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Well, you know,
right.
I mean, you know, everybody has, like, their, you know, their rebound. So that was her rebound from you. I get
pre-bald Britney. So it was fine.
Right, pre-three baby Britney.
That's right.
Dirty
that's
martini.
Right.
And I just sat at the bar and I had this and I was like, oh, now I get this whole drinking thing. I like this. This is like a cocktail. Yeah.
You don't strike me as a dirty martini girl. I got to be honest with you. That's surprising. You don't strike me as a dirty martini girl. Like
gin. Gin, two olives. Yeah. I'm not so much anymore, but I'm definitely still a vodka girl. But I love vodka. But that was the first thing that I had where I was like, oh, I get this whole cocktail thing. Because in college, it was all about nasty, drunk frat boys and beer. And I was like, there's no part of that that looks interesting.
Hey, check this out. I made the most amazing cocktail for this past party this Saturday. We muddled some basil and cucumber together and then hit it with a little tonic water and a little bit of gin and garnish it with the cucumber. Dude, what a fucking great summer cocktail for the Hamptons. Are you kidding me? They thought I was a million bucks.
The other thing is I will take anything that is tequila and spicy. So whether it's tequila and fresh jalapeno or tequila and Thai chili pepper, like whatever that is, like, you know, throw tequila and something spicy in a glass with a good amount of ice, and I'm your girl. Like, you own
it.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, the next time we're tasting wings together, we're having tequila and spicy whatever the fuck we can find. That's what we're going to do.
Yes,
the final question
I'll bring the bottle, you bring the spice.
There you go. I got chilies all day long. So the final question for you, and it's a real question, and we have a lot of young culinarians and young entrepreneurs who check this show out, and you've been very successful with the things you've done. This conversation has been amazing. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to come on here on a Monday night at 11 o'clock and still be talking to me, but I'm telling you right now, if you had Twitter, you'd see why we're still talking, which is crazy.
I'm too old for Twitter.
we're not going to have that conversation. Come on, we've been over this. Like, I'm older than you. Like, enough.
Not by much, baby. Not by much.
Like, well, the fact that I can still get called
later,
baby makes
later,
it
when there's no when no one's listening, when we're sitting there getting drunk and catching wings, we'll have this later.
Well, the fact that
to be continued, my friend.
The fact that I can get called baby makes me feel good about myself. So, leave it alone. Just let it sit there because that's what I have to go on for the rest of the day today and tomorrow. What's the biggest piece of advice you give to a young entrepreneur, a young culinarian, a young person who's looking at maybe, you know what, I want to try to do something in this field, in the entertainment field? Because I can't even say TV anymore because TV is it's outdated. It's not just TV. It's internet. It's OTT boxes. So what's the biggest piece of advice? What would you say? Hey, if you're looking to get involved in doing this, here's what I could tell you.
If you're looking okay. If you're looking to get involved in this, here is what I
Wait, was that
you.
Does that count as a Bill O'Reilly?
No, not really. I mean, it's a hard thing because, you know, what everybody wants is different. You know, some people want to cook. Some people want to, you know, be on camera. Some people want to make things. Like, I'm someone who I'm like, oh, like, even just being, like, on the radio with you is just like, oh, my voice is terrible and I'm losing it. I'm like,
oh, shut
and
up.
I'm a behind-the-scenes kind of person. I'm a puppet master, not really on the other side. So what everybody wants is different. But what I can say is this. After, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but after having done this for almost 20 years,
right.
Truth of it is that 5 years ago, I would have said that you have to know the right people and you have to be in the right place and you have to,
right.
you know, but digital and OTT is really changing the game. It's leveling the playing field in a really beautiful way. And the thing of it is that, you know, there are plenty of actors that love what they do that don't want to be, quote unquote, famous. So it all depends on what your end game is. If you just want to be in this and just be part of the conversation and make the food you want to make or do what you want to do, for me, I just want to make the content I want to make. And one of the reasons why I left broadcast to be at Huffington Post and AOL is because I get to make the content that I want to make. And having that creative freedom, but more importantly, being able to have that voice of like, I'm going to take a chance and I'm going to do this thing. And some people may like it and some people may hate it. But, you know, let's just give it a shot. For all of you who want to do something, whatever that thing is, now is your time. Now is the time that you have a voice where a couple years ago that you didn't. So try to figure out what it is about you that makes you stand out from the crowd, whether it's who you are or what you are or what you want to do or what you want to make, whatever that is, and then just do that thing. And it really helps to learn about hashtagging and, you know, being on social, but just put yourself out there and see what happens. The beautiful thing about digital and social is you can change things and tweak them live in real time based on feedback. At a network, you spend a ton of money on creating a show, and you don't know if people like that show or hate that show until you're already 4 or 5 episodes in, and your money is spent, and by the time you figure out everyone hates it, it's done, and the network
wow.
cancels your favorite show. Versus
yeah.
in digital and on social, pay attention to people's comments. I mean, yeah, there's always going to be haters, but you know, you'll weed it out. You'll figure it out. Pay attention and make tweaks based on the feedback that you get. And eventually, you know, you'll see what your thing is. And sometimes you may set out to do something and people like you as something a little bit different. That I wanted to be an actor, and I'm a lot better behind the scenes, trust me.
Right.
So, you know, I'm a lot better working with comedians and being a writer than I am being somebody who's trying to be on camera. So be open-minded, be flexible, and go for it. And listen to your audience and give yourself a chance. Everybody, no matter what, no matter how old you are, is going to look at you and go, this sucks or you suck. If you love this, keep going. And if you get enough feedback and you get enough people that are like, hey, you're cool, or hey, I get this, I totally get what you're trying to do, then keep going for it and keep pushing because it will come. Now is your
time. Wow. I mean, that's like, I'm ready to go play a football game right now. Like, honestly,
well,
you just.
I'm sorry. I love you, Chris, but, you know.
No, that was fantastic, and you're absolutely right. And I'll tell you what, like, if you're looking for an inspiration, there you have it right there from
the
my friend.
They don't need the networks anymore. They need you. They need you way more than you need them. I mean, we're on Chopped season
521.
They're out of chefs. Like, you know, like, we're all out of chefs. You know, everybody, like, everybody's out of this. So, like, right now, everyone needs you more than you need them. If you love what
wow.
you do, if you're good, just do what you do and be, but you got to be fucking good at it. You don't ever utter the words, that's not my job. Don't ever utter the words, that's not my job. Don't ever say, oh, that's that's beneath me or that's above me or whatever. You have to go into something and be willing to do whatever it takes. And if you do that, it will come because they need you more than you need them.
There you have it. That's words to live by right there. I just sent you some stuff on Messenger, by the way, so you can see, so you don't think I'm a crazy person. I'm sending you a message in Messengers. Because I'm not sure if I'm supposed to text you or use Messenger on Facebook. I don't know. So
no,
I'm just sending you messages. Hey, that's gospel from my friend Kristen Hartley. She's amazing. She's executive producer for Huffington Post and AOL Studios. What an incredibly insightful conversation this has been. And I can't thank you enough for your time. Like, you've been amazing. How can people find you? How do we find you? How do we find you on social or Huffington Post? How do we find you?
Oh, no, I'm Hartley TV is my Instagram, and then my email is HartleyTV@yahoo.com.
Oh, my God, people are emailing you, too? What are you doing? Don't do that. What's wrong with you?
it's pretty easy. It's fine.
I had a guy give his phone number out on accident. I had a guy give his phone number out in the show one time. It was a terrible idea. Don't do that.
I'm not that stupid.
Right on.
Whiskey in this drink.
Well, listen, you've been so much fun to talk to. I could talk to you for 2.5 more hours. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
I really appreciate it. Anytime, and it's just great to be able to talk to you and be able to talk to someone such as yourself that, like, totally gets it, but more importantly, has, like, the passion and the love. Like, you are exactly what everyone should be aspiring to be right now because a combination of the respect of your peers. But, you know, being a chef, be a chef. Don't be a TV chef, be a chef. And you're
right.
A chef. And so having the respect of your peers, but also making the food you want to make and making the content that you want to make, if I could say anything that's inspiring, it would be for them to pay attention to someone like you because you're the kind of thing that is the future in this business.
You're going to make me cry. That was awesome. I really, really, I can't thank you enough for that. That's amazing, and I really appreciate it. And, Kristen, maybe we'll do a part 2 sometime. I don't know. We should catch up soon.
Anytime.
Because we have a lot to talk about, I think.
As long as it doesn't cut into our wing time.
Oh, no shit. Hey, I won't be the next one, but at the following one, I will be.
Me neither. I'm not going to be there this weekend either. So next time. Next time for
sure.
There
it is.
All right.
Next time.
All right.
Next time.
Thank you so
Kristen.
Much.
You're awesome. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. Hey, and we'll look forward to finding more of your videos all over Facebook because you get 7 million views on these things, which is amazing. So congratulations on that
and all your
success.
The show is called Best Bites for AOL and Huffington Post, and you will see Volcano Potatoes.
Volcano Potatoes sounds awesome. Kristen, thanks a lot. I appreciate it, man, and we'll talk to you down the road. Okay, hon?
Thanks. Okay.
All right. Take care. See ya. All right, guys, there you have it. That's my friend, Kristen Hartley. What an amazing conversation. I just looked up at how much time we had left, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I could keep talking to her, but I'm not going to do that. We gotta pap it up. Maybe we'll do a part 2 with Kristen at some point, because I'll tell you what they're doing at HuffPost is absolutely amazing, and what she does is amazing, and she's a very talented person, and you can tell by watching the end product she makes and how passionate she is about it. Let's get into a couple of plugs and get on down the street here. That's what I'm talking about. Check it out, everybody. The sold out Dinner Underground happening at Copps Island Brewing Company. Copps Island Brewing, listen to me. What's my name? Where am I at? How am I doing? At Copps Island with Norm Bloom and Sons is happening this Saturday. We're going to do some fun stuff. We might do a Facebook Live from it. It's sold out, but it's going to be a great, great event. Looking forward to it like a champion. Hopefully, you guys will check that out. And of course, next Monday night, you guys, let me tell you about this guest. Let me pause this shit. It's going to be an amazing show. Next Monday night, ladies and gentlemen, we have the one and only Quentin Middleton, knife maker to all of your favorite chefs. That's right. Quentin Middleton's going to be on this very program talking about making knives. I'm looking forward to it so, so much. Big shout out and thanks to my friend Kristen Hartley, for the executive producer for HuffPost and AOL, for coming on here. And ladies and gentlemen, please remember, food is one of the most important things that we have in life. Everything important in life happens around food. Let's make sure we give it the time that it deserves. I'll see you guys next Monday night with my man, Quentin Middleton. Peace. Thank you.
I came to play. There's a price to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees.